Hello and welcome to the Musicians Map podcast. My name is Kane Power. This week is part one of a two-part podcast. In part one, we're talking touring. We're going into scheduling, booking, route, contacts, venues, gear, transport, accommodation, money, and a whole lot more in detail. We're going to discuss how to book, promote, and execute a successful tour as an independent musician, as well as how to fund it off your own back. This is DIY touring, and it's what you're going to have to deal with if you want to go on tour yourself, no matter what genre you play. It's rough, it's real, and thankfully, to help provide some clarity and experience, I'm joined by Tom Anderson.
So, cheers, mate.
Cheers, buddy.
Hello, Tom. Welcome to the Musicians Map podcast.
Thank you.
So, I'm going to introduce you, and I'll do my best. We have Tom Anderson. Tom is a sound engineer, a venue owner, and a multi-instrumentalist. He's taught audio at the Music and Audio Institute of New Zealand. Do you still?
I do still, yeah.
Still? And he tours the world as the front of house engineer for death metal luminaries Ulcerate, as well as handling the sound for many world-class acts touring throughout the country, much of our own acts as well. Tom plays bass in a punk band called Master Blaster, who have just returned from an extensive European tour. He co-owns the excellent Whammy Bar in Auckland Central, which is where we are, and he once was a member of legendary ska punk band The Managers.
Right. Have I missed
no
anything? Was that it?
That's amazing. That's, you can write my my funeral sheets.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think the best way to do it is to set up a scenario. So we're going on tour. Me and you have just formed a band, and the listener. So we're a three-piece rock band. We're from London, and we're going to tour the UK.
Okay.
It's easy. UK is small. We don't have to fly. You know, we know all the places.
Okay.
We are well rehearsed, so we've been jamming for quite a while. We've just released an album, hence we're going on tour.
Okay.
Yeah, using the UK because it's small and easy to picture. But for anyone that's listening, what we're talking about can be applied to any country or confederation. You know, you can do it in Europe, you can do it in the States. It doesn't really matter. It's the same kind of thing. So, Tom, what is the very first step that we would need to take, do you think, when we're thinking about, okay, let's just go on tour? Where do we start?
If it's for the reason of doing an album release tour, then either make sure you have the album in your possession, or you have it arranged so that you have it delivered in time. The amount of album release tours that have happened, or the album release shows that have happened, where the records or the CDs or whatever haven't shown up. It might be different in this day and age with digital releases and stuff, but there's still, you know, sending it out to aggregators like Spotify and iTunes and all that kind of stuff. So it seems unrelated to the tour, but like,
yeah,
over the years, especially with vinyl, like, and as vinyl's kind of increasing, so we release all our stuff on vinyl, and that's kind of what we build around. If we go, we want a tour, say for example this last European UK tour was June, July. We're like, okay, what's the latest that we can send this record off to get pressed? Okay, we've got that date, work back from that. Okay, what's the latest we can get it mixed and mastered? What's the latest we can get it recorded? So you know, for us going away in June, July, we're thinking about that in November, sort of about we'll, and then starting to panic around February kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem like a likely thing for it, but if it's for an album release, then that would be what I'd kind of aim around. And then either have it in possession or have a pretty solid idea that I can get it off in time so that it comes back in time.
So that the promotion coincides with you leaving.
Exactly, you know, because then there's the artwork, there's the all that kind of stuff. And the artwork generally would get used for the tour poster as well. And inevitably, all this stuff ends up being last minute. And if you surround yourself with great people, like you know, you've got a good contact at wherever you're getting pressed, or you've established a contact with them. If you're the artist for the record, you have a contact with them, and you know they're going to not flake on you, and they're going to kind of keep in contact, and they're okay for maybe mocking up a tour poster at the same time or something.
So you're kind of planning 6 to 7 months before you're even
for
the release,
for going overseas. For sure. And then, you know, and then booking maybe 3 months in advance locally here in New Zealand. So planning is everything. And also venues are booked up, you know, like the amount of people that will, I've been on both ends of it. I've been messaging venues in, you know, Wellington or Australia or wherever, and going, hi, my band wants to come and play next month. And I literally got the email back going, if I didn't have a booking for the Saturday and, you know, that next month or whatever, I'd be really worried as a venue owner, because I need to have all of these things locked in. And for example, here we're generally booked at least 3 months in advance. So, so figuring out a timeline and then going, okay, what's the routing, for example, would possibly be the next thing. Going, where do we want to play? And what's the shortest drives, or what makes sense? We did one tour in Europe last year where, because of some different cancellations and because we were trying to just play as many shows as we could, we'd do some crazy things like played in Budapest and then loaded out in like 100% humidity and 30 something degree heat at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Into the van and drove 18 hours across Europe to load into Düsseldorf to play, and then, you know, with very little sleep and kind of, you know, contracting all sorts of bizarre heat rashes and things in the van of 10 of us or whatever. So figuring out how not to do that. So this last time we did it, we generally had fairly short drives, which meant we didn't get to go to some places we want to go to, but it meant we had a much nicer time.
Okay, so let's backtrack a little bit. How do you find out where you want to go? So you're playing in Budapest. Is that just because Budapest is a rad city and there's probably a decent scene there, or because you know people, or is it because you've sold records there?
I doubt we've sold any records in Budapest. Yeah. Other than that, the two shows we've played there the last two times. I think that was a connection of last time we toured with another band, Hailgun from Australia, and I think they knew someone there and or had played there before or something like that, and it was like, okay, cool, we'll chuck Budapest into the pot. Where can we fit that in the mix? You know, we've got these free dates. And so figuring out where I want to play, generally looking, you know, what's the word? There's some horrible Tony Robbins type quote that's like, success leaves clues or something like that.
Okay.
Yep. Which someone once told me. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of that kind of style stuff, but what that kind of left was, you know, if you're not reinventing the wheel, which generally you're not, then where have similar style bands played?
Okay, cool.
And what's their routing been? What venues have they played? What bands have they played with? That kind of thing. And then generally that can kind of throw in some ideas. And if the three of us in this theoretical band were, you know, democratically chucking in different ideas, it might be that if we're doing the UK, you know, it's like, oh, I want to play in Edinburgh on the Friday and Bristol on the Saturday or something. And it's like, and then you look at the map and you go, well, if we have a really good show in Edinburgh and, you know, we don't get to, you know, load out of the venue till one or whatever, and we're hanging out with our new friends and then we're sleeping on their couch and then we have to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and drive all the way down to Bristol, that might not be the funnest thing. Why don't we play Glasgow the next day and then make our way down to Bristol, or make our way up, you know, kind of figure out a route.
Okay, so you're kind of saying that you'd sit down and go, where are the places that we think we could, based on where other bands are playing, based on where we have connections, and you might start, say, okay, well, we've got mates in Edinburgh, and we've got a really good venue, and so we know, so let's start there, so we can go, and then from there kind of go, all right, yeah, Glasgow's next because it's a big city, and it's okay.
So we'll message the Edinburgh people and maybe they know someone in Glasgow. If they don't, let's look at where similar bands have played and with who, and then maybe, you know, with Facebook and things, it's really easy. And, you know, on this last run, we kind of, we spotted the weekend dates, and then we ended up with some free dates during the day. And I just messaged a friend of mine who had toured the UK recently, and he was like, oh, hit up this person if you want to go to this place, hit up this person if you want to go to that place, hit up this person.
Nice.
And then I just messaged them and went, we've got some free dates, anything you can slot in. And we ended up slotting in, you know, some in-between shows, which worked out really well.
Awesome. Okay. So what about other acts? So, you know, if you, if you've got a kind of rough idea of your route and your cities, do you how do you find other acts in the cities?
Well, I think the best way to book a show is to find a band that you like and ask them to put the show on, and then go, we'll do the same for you when you come through our town.
Yep.
And A, that builds a community. B, it probably means they're the locals who are actually going to put some more work into it. And yeah, and it kind of, it tends to work out. I mean, it, it's different for different genres and different levels and things like that that, that people operate at. But I think for an independent rock band that was, you know, starting out on their first album tour, possibly not extremely well known in their own capacity, maybe no label or anything like that. Finding bands that they, you know, that we'd like, and then going, hi, do you want to put a show on for us? They'll know similar bands. They'll have connections with the venue owners, all that kind of stuff.
And so you can play to their local fans and offer them the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of stuff. I think, you know, it's kind of, it's common sense stuff, but it's making it easier for yourself, I think. Because I see both things happen all the time. I see both here and overseas where there'll be a band and they'll be like, right, we're going on a big album tour, and they'll print these big posters and it all has photos of them on their posters. And, you know, it's like, you know, insert rock band playing tonight at, you know, and like no one cares. Yeah. So it doesn't, it's kind of, it just is a bit of a silly kind of ego stroking exercise.
And you're relying on the people that maybe might frequent that venue or something. You're
but not that doesn't really exist either, I think, you know, when you get people like going, so how many people do you normally get on a Friday night? It's like, well, it depends on who's coming through and what pull they have and that kind of thing. Whereas, you know, if it's a local band that already has friends and fans and all that kind of stuff, and play a similar style of music, you're probably far more likely to have a successful show.
So
kind of heading up those bands, and some of them won't get back to you and some of them will and give you all sorts of amazing contacts for other places and things.
I guess it's about partly finding a scene as well, eh?
I think that's, I
struggled with that before.
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing. Like heaps of, like even my students would ask, like, you know, oh, we want to do this, we want to do that, what do you recommend? And it's like, well, whatever style of music you're playing, I think it's easy for me, having played in bands that have strong scenes surrounding them, like punk rock and hardcore and ska and things like that, that to get involved in that and to be a part of that. And then it's really easy, I think, now to kind of spread that further than just your local city. And so if you're involved in it, that means you're going to other shows, you know the other bands that are happening, and you can then offer that reciprocal thing to other people that are coming through. So someone can go, oh, you know, Kane, he knows bands in Auckland, whatever, or London. We'll hit him up, and then you can go, yeah, cool, I think that, you know, these three bands would be a good fit or whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and do you think that, well, I mean, it probably is true, that within scenes, like you're saying, if you contact someone in a different city, ask them, you know, who's good, what's happening, where do I play? That's a legitimate way to find your venues.
Yeah, totally. And again, it depends on who you contact. And so, like, I'm sure there would be half a dozen different people in any city that if you contacted and you went, who should we be playing with, what venue should we be playing, blah, 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 they'll be affiliated with a certain venue or a certain sub-scene or whatever. So kind of if you find a band that you actually like, which can be quite hard to do, you know, depending on the city. And sometimes it's just like whatever you get offered. And it might be that you don't necessarily dig that music or whatever, but they're really nice people and all that kind of thing.
Yep.
And, you can kind of build from that. And some of it's trial by fire, you know? It's like in this scenario, if we're in London and we're like going off to play in Nottingham or something like that, and we've never been to Nottingham before, and there's this one kid, Henry, who's who's going, yeah, man, I'll put on a show for you. It's like, some of it is like, I don't know if I'm turning up to play at his, you know, at his parents' basement to him and his three dogs, or whether he's, you know, it's kind of...
Whether he's in the scene. He's
Totally. And I mean, but you can figure that stuff out pretty easily. And by seeing what they've done before and, you know, face stalking, whether they're actually involved in things, but...
We've done that before. One of my old bands, Tyrants, a similar thing happened. One kid got us down to do a show in Eastbourne. And it was just what you said. It was some kid and he was a fan. And he was like, I'll put on a show for you at this pub on a Friday night, you know, big crowd kind of thing. And we're like, ah, okay, we'll just go down and do it. We need gigs. And we went down to do it. And it literally was him and his two mates and, you know, his mum and dad, and then a couple of old geezers at the back of the bar. And we're like, oh, never again. And then, you know, a few months later, we got a call from a kid in Brighton. He was like, yeah, come down, I'll put a show on for you in Brighton. We're like, oh, I don't know, man. You know, can you guarantee some, you know, we've never heard of you. Can you guarantee some fans? He's like, yeah, I'll definitely guarantee 12 people. We're like, ah, oh, fuck it. Okay. And he
did he guarantee 12 people?
He guaranteed 12 people. I think we had like 18 people.
There you go.
And they went nuts.
That's awesome. You know,
they had a great time. We had a good night. So I think, and how we kind of figured it out in the end was after his guarantee, we just looked him up on Facebook, as you said. And it turns out he was in the band that was supporting and they have a few followers. And so it seemed worth it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, on this last tour we just did, we had a couple of free dates, like Mondays and Tuesdays, and things are obviously harder to fill than Thursday, Friday, Saturdays, either at venues or from bands or promoters wanting to actually put things on. And we found this little town, and a guitarist found this little town in Germany called Rocklitz in East Germany, which was when the wall came down, was completely like decimated by the simulation, and like it went from like over 10,000 population down to like 4,000 because all the factories got shut down and things. And it's this amazing little old cobblestone streeted town, you know, with a 1,000-year-old castle and all this kind of stuff. We kind of turned up and we're like, we're so in the wrong place. It was a Monday night. And we're like, it's like, no, it seems, you know, it seems legit, you know, like, and we're like driving around like, so this is such a, you know, like a really quaint little sort of village, you know. And driving along, and then all of a sudden there's this one building and it's just covered in, you know, anarchist posters and graffiti and like our band's posters and stuff. And we're like, okay, cool, I guess we're in the right place, and like open it up. And it's just this little place that this guy Stanley had bought, and this older punk, and he'd like turned this building into downstairs into this little venue bar. He had a big garden at the back. On the second floor, he'd built accommodation for bands and built a kitchen for bands and a bathroom for bands. He lived on the upstairs floor. And they just had this like, this mecca in the middle of this like quaint little village. And yeah, maybe like 20 people showed up on this Monday night.
Yeah.
It was probably the best show of the tour, you know? And we played like to, you know, some bigger festivals and things, which were really fun for their own right. But that was like the most fun, I think, we had on that tour. And it was like one of those total punts of like, I don't know if we should even do the show, you know? And you do it, and then it's awesome. You know? And then you have other ones where it's like, this is going to be a mean show.
Yeah.
And you turn up and you're like, brah, brah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, maybe you can't find that out until you're kind of there sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, true, I guess. Or at least you know some people that have done it. So we're following the tour path by other acts. That's something that I've followed quite when I've been booking tours, just hunting down the bands that I like and looking up their tour posters and seeing which venues they play at, and then calling the venue and saying, can I play that? And, you know,
And I mean, and that makes perfect sense. And that operates for bigger levels as well. I know that Amy, who tour manages and books Ulcerate tours, which are at a much higher level than what we do, you know, we'll do the same thing. It'll be like, we're going to a new place. You know, they're probably at the level now where a lot of promoters are kind of contacting them, but it's like, oh, cool, we want to try and fit a show in, I don't know, Sweden or somewhere, for example. Okay, where are similar kind of type bands playing? And it generally, regardless of how big the city is, you know, from London down to Brooklets, you know, there's going to be that your niche of music is probably going to be centered around one or two kind of venues, you know? And that might be because of depending on capacity size or something like that.
Yeah.
You know? So...
Okay. So what comes first? Do you approach the venues and try and get the dates that you want? Or do you plan your tour around your preferred dates and try and find venues that will suit?
I don't know. I generally work with other people when we're doing that, so that both approaches work. Mm. It kind of depends on the bands and the places. Like, if we already know the venue owners or the venues, for example, then generally it will be hitting them up and going, hey, we're looking to come to this, your town on this date, you know, do you have this date free? And doing that like 4 months in advance.
Yeah.
And some venues will come back and go, that's way too, come back to me closer to the time. And others will come back going, oh, you're lucky, that's the only free date we have that month, or whatever.
Yeah, or we're just starting to book then now.
Or we don't have that date free, I'm sorry. Yep. And then maybe you work your way down those venue lists, you know?
Yep.
But having a rough kind of routing plotted out so that you can fill those dates and without zigzagging all around a particular country.
Yeah.
And doing it with enough time. And that would potentially give you enough time as well to go, you know, you could hit up a venue and they might be like, that's cool, but I don't know who you are. And this happened a lot with when I was booking shows for my last band, PCP Eagles, and I'd be hitting up, we booked an Australian tour, and I would hit up venues and they, you know, they just wouldn't get back to me because they'd be like, I know what it's like. You get 100 emails a day saying, hi, my band that you've never heard of wants to book in.
Yeah.
However, if then you message a band that you like that has a relationship with them and you go, hey, do you guys want to play with us on this date? And they're like, yeah. It's like, cool, do you mind hitting up the venue, or do you want to put the show on for us? That kind of thing. And, you know, it's like anything. If you've got 100 emails in your inbox saying, hi, I want to play your venue, you're going to go to immediately the ones that you already have a relationship with. You're going to go straight back to them.
Yep.
You're going to know if it's going to be a good night or that kind of thing.
And again, if that band has experience in that city, then if that venue says no, they can go, well, you know, we can play here. And if that venue says no, they can go, well, we could probably play in my garage.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Totally, you know.
Nice. That kind of covers the next question, I think, as well. Then the best route, so we're saying my next kind of question was, you know, additionally, do you plan the best route first, or is your route dictated by the dates you can play certain cities or venues? I think we've kind of basically, it comes down to plan in advance, and kind of have an outline of your route, and then
it's going to change.
Start contacting people and you might have to miss a couple of nights or venues or
of thing. And then it comes down to, particularly with the Monday and Tuesday nights, it's in, okay, we'll take a show anywhere within a, say, 8-hour driving radius, you know, or whatever, you know, because it's like, because when you're on tour, particularly in Europe, it's like every night you're not playing a show. I mean, it's a wasted night, and it might be nice to go and do some sightseeing or what, that kind of thing. But ultimately, you're trying to play every single night, because even if that means $50 gas money or... free accommodation for that night, because you're staying with someone or the venue provides it, or a meal or whatever, you know, just keeping all those kind of costs down. So it's just trying to play as much as possible.
Okay, and that's kind of covered. We've talked about, okay, So let's talk about booking the venues themselves. Mm-hmm. We've touched on it, you know, calling them in person, perhaps calling local artists and liaising with them and getting them to to do it. Have you ever used booking agents to book a tour?
Yep. Not personally, but I've been on tours that have had booking agents used. And for example, this next, I don't know the in and outs of it, but this next European tour I'm doing, we're doing some Scandinavian dates, and there's a promoter there who's kind of gone, I think is promoting, say, four of those dates. So it's like, cool, we want to go to Scandinavia.
Yep.
And they'll go, yeah, cool, well, we can play here, and because they've got extensive contacts with all those venues and all that kind of thing, then they can go, they just take on, and it becomes a co-presents or whatever, and they just take on those dates.
Yep, and so they're promoting as well as booking.
Exactly, yeah. We used a booking, no, a lie. we used a booking agent for some of the European shows last year. And they were great. I mean, they worked with a lot bigger bands than us, but were just really nice and liked both of our band's music and had worked with, we were on tour with another band, Hailgun from Australia, and they'd worked with them on their last tour.
Mm-hmm.
And they, it was interesting to see how they were able to get shows for us that, say, we wouldn't have been able to get by ourselves because they have extensive knowledge of the venues and the personnel, but also if you're a booking agent, you're putting a lot of acts through particular venues or through particular promoters and things like that. And so they want to appease you, so they might say yes to a band or a tour package that they're not as stoked on because they know that you're going to give them you know, a bigger one later on or whatever. So it's just kind of, you know, solidifying those kind of relationships, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And as far as the compensation goes for booking agents, in your experience, do they take a per gig or is it a per kind of tour? Or
it depends. Ronnie, who was booking for us, was just super nice and was just like, oh, whatever you can afford, which is very rare.
Yeah, yeah.
And was just, you know, just a really good dude. But generally, I think it's a percentage per show.
Yep.
So if the, and you know they'll generally get you a guarantee and ensure that you you will have a bed and a meal or whatever that night.
Yeah,
particularly in Europe where that's really common.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've done a couple of tours with booking agents. One in particular in Australia. I wish I could remember his name. It was some kind of straight up hardcore touring agent, booking agent rather. And he promoted all our shows as well. And he was exactly that. So he. He just took a cut of our door sales, but he booked us amazing venues with amazing bands, and he made sure we had somewhere to sleep each night, even negotiated us drinks. He acted like a full tour manager, and he was just the booking
agent. He came on the tour as well?
Kind of. He would show up, you know, mysteriously. He'd show up in the bathroom or something and hand out some beers. Or, you know, like, you know, he was that kind of guy.
Pop out of nowhere.
Yeah, he wasn't in the van with us or anything. But then, like, you'd drive overnight to Sydney and then all of a sudden he's already in Sydney or, you know.
Right.
Yeah, he was that guy. But he was brilliant. But I've also, I hired a booking agent in the UK for a Death in Texas tour. And turns out that the booking agent just sort of pawned off our tour onto his intern.
Right.
Who booked us progressively worse gigs.
Right.
The kind of gigs, you know, promises, show up, no one, you know, show up, the venue doesn't realize you're there and really awful stuff. So I've kind of had mixed experiences. I think it just depends if you're going with professionals or amateurs.
Well, and sometimes shit happens. Like we had that happen in Prague last time, and that was a show that this booking agent had booked for us, which was a New Zealand and Australian band, and also a Dutch band as well, which is where the strength of having a booking agent can come in, is that they can combine different tours together to make it work. And we drove all day to get to Prague, and amazingly beautiful city that we didn't have time to see that time. And, you know, load all our gear down these, like, sharp stone steps and, you know, get into this little room, and then the beer fridge fell over and like all of the beer, like it was like one of those big tall kind of like, you know, 6 foot tall kind of beer fridges fell over and like all the beer smashed, and it was just one of those kind of weird starts. And then as we set up going on, we're like, oh, you know, we're supposed to be meeting blah 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 the promoter, because generally a booking agent will put you onto a promoter in each different town.
Yeah.
Turns out this promoter was doing a bigger show up the road and had said yes to this booking agent because I think they wanted, you know, they worked with him and wanted to appease him.
Yeah.
And, yeah, eventually his friend turned up to kind of save the day, but it was just this total shit show of like, I mean, it was great. It was fun. I was playing a show in Prague. I'm not going to complain. But it was just like the promoter never made it down. He got his friends to kind of, you know, they kind of came in to kind of to rescue everything and kind of did an okay job of it,
yep.
Considering the circumstances. But you never know that's going to happen until you're going to get there.
Booking agents. So, yeah, okay. So there's no one way or the other, I suppose.
No.
okay, so you've just mentioned loading in.
Mm.
Let's talk about gear.
Mm.
What gear do you take on tour? Does it depend on your transport, first of all?
Well, your transport probably depends on what gear you need to take.
There we go.
So, you know, ideally, we've done it both ways. Again, just comparing the last European tours, because we're talking about the UK. First one, we hired full backline.
Mm-hmm.
It was two bands, so it made it easier to get a splitter van, because we had to transport like 10 of us or whatever. And then by splitter van, I mean it's got like, say, 12 seats in the front and then a cage in the back for the gear. Went and hired all the backline, had, you know, amazing backline, and drove around, and everywhere we went, we set up our own backline, and that worked out really well.
Yep.
This last time, we just ensured that there would be the basics there, cabs and drum shells and hardware. And we actually managed to pull it off with just traveling cymbals, snare and kick pedal, and then both myself playing bass and the guitarist took little travel heads.
Oh, like so, the little tiny Terrors?
Yeah, so there was a little orange OR15, which is a little guitar amp, that we chose because it can run two cabs off the back of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a little Aguilar bass head. And so it could be anything, but they were just powerful enough that, you know, up to the point where you're playing shows or festivals where you've got full backline provided, would use that backline provided, but they completely save us at places where, at smaller places like Rocklets, for example, where they managed to cobble together a drum kit and some cabs for us, but, you know, guitar heads or whatever was kind of getting a bit more difficult. So, yeah, that worked for us, and that meant we only had to use little hire cars because there was only five of us, so we could drive around in a hire car and fit everything in, whereas if we were carrying bass cabs and drums and things, we would have had to spend a lot more money on transport.
Need a van, so it's kind of one or the other, eh?
Yeah.
So if you've got a van, you can either take all of your own cabs and drum kit and everything, or hire. Otherwise, I guess you are taking a little bit of a risk.
Always,
if you're leaving, you know, if you're just taking your guitars and your breakables and you're saying, can we borrow your cabs, can we use the house drum kit, could be good, could be shit.
Totally. I think drums particularly suffer from that, as you'd know. There was one show we played and it was just like things were moving everywhere, and we play very fast and we don't stop for the whole set, and you know, you kind of, as a bass player, you get in tune with the drums, and it's like anything slightly different, especially if you're playing every single night, you kind of notice, and it's like just going like, you're still keeping up and everything's fine, but you're the only one who kind of notices something's different. You're just looking around, there's like a floor tom's kind of rattling off that way, and like
legs, you know, getting further out as the kick drum drifts off,
that kind of thing,
cymbals on the side,
all that kind of stuff. So so I mean, like, you know, it kind of depends, but I think next time we'd probably do the same, but then take hardware as well.
Yep.
Because hardware was the one that, you know, you can kind of generally make any drum kit work.
Yep.
But, you know, if you've got old hardware with without felts and tops and things on it,
and
all that kind of stuff.
Gaffer tape together.
Yeah, it just, you know, you're spending, in this theoretical band, maybe not so much, but you're taking time off work, you're spending a lot of money to get there, it's a lot of time.
Mm.
It's what you want to do. If you're not enjoying it, then it's, you know, you're not exactly doing it for the money. So it's like...
Yeah, you show up and your drum kit's falling apart and you have a crappy gig.
Yeah, yeah.
Why are you there?
Yeah, totally. And it's like, you know, I've done, like I said before, I drove 18 hours without sleeping to play for 20 minutes and drove across like 6 countries or something. You know? Like, and was really happy about doing that.
Yeah.
And we had a really great show and it was really awesome. Mm. Whereas if, you know, did that and like was playing on a little combo amp that sounded like it was farting the whole time and I couldn't hear anything and things like that, then...
Then you'd be pissed, yeah.
Well, yeah, it would just if you can make it as good as possible for yourself, then why not do that, you know?
Yeah, so I was going to say, absolute basics, and as a drummer, the absolute basics are the, you know, the breakables,
mm.
the cymbals, the snare, the kick, and your drumsticks.
Mm.
But I would recommend to any drummers to travel with hardware.
Mm.
Unless you're going on the plane, you obviously can't take it.
We fly it with Ulcerate and fly some extra bits and pieces.
Oh, yeah? Like a traps case or something?
Yeah, just a soft traps case. But that's only because Jamie has... you know, I think he gets all the normal just boom stands or whatever, but all of his little clamps and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because those are the things that generally don't show up when you're hiring every night. And
it'll
like
save
that.
On setup and stuff. Well.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I've benefited hugely from taking my own stands to gigs.
Mm.
I just switched to that, doing it every single time.
Yeah.
It's so much more worth it. So, okay, so we've got venues and we know what gear we've got. We're probably hiring a van or taking a car, depending on how much gear we have.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we sleep?
Again, budget.
Yep.
You know, some bands that I tour with, you know, they're playing really hard and they're working really hard and they're at a level where they would rather have a bed every night than take a punt on sleeping on someone's floor and things like that.
Yeah.
They've been doing it long enough, they paid their dues.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, you know, we'll pay out of our pocket so that we have a certain standard, you know.
Yeah.
Some bands I tour with, I get, you know, we're staying in 5-star hotels and I get like a double bed that I only ever get to sleep in for 3 hours a night because, you know, by the time you've loaded out a gig, it's 3 a.m. and then you have to be up at 6 a.m. to leave the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, you know.
Hey, but those 3 hours.
Those 3 hours are brilliant, 3 hours of sleep. And I'm glad they're not necessarily on the floor if I'm working that hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, the kind of, the tier down is staying at like side of the road motels.
Yep.
Generally you can book a double room, which means 2 double beds. And that means 4 people can sleep in them.
Yeah.
It might be a couch. That's 5 people in one room.
Mm.
When you break it down cost wise, that's way cheaper than a backpacker's.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The next level down is would book at a backpacker's or an Airbnb, and just, you know, especially there's 5 of us, taking into account again gear. I've had bands who have had their gear stolen from vehicles.
Yeah,
so
you have to load out into wherever you are.
Totally. So, but generally just the things you really care about. So that could be guitars, pedals, amps and things like that, and you probably leave, you know, some things that maybe don't matter so much in the car.
Yep.
But never take any chances. A month doesn't go by without a story of someone in the States or some of varying levels.
Yeah. Getting ripped off.
Getting ripped off. You know.
It sucks, man.
It sucks real hard. And it's just, it's a pain in the ass. It's 3 a.m. You're real tired. You've had a real good night. You might have had too many drinks.
Mm.
You've got to be up again at 7 a.m. to drive to the next place. The last thing you want to do is lug your heavy stuff up 3 flights of stairs into the dorm or whatever it is.
Yep.
Just do it.
Just do it every time, eh?
Every single time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always done it.
Yeah. And then the next step down, well, not necessarily step down, but step across maybe, would be the promoter or the local band is like, yeah, I can put you guys up.
Yep.
And that could be anything from, like on this last tour, having an amazing dorm all to ourselves where we all had... pardon me, single or double beds.
Mm.
You know, people, particularly in Europe, is the best place to tour as a band because you always get put up, you always get fed, and you always get drinks.
Oh, that's amazing.
And you always get paid well.
Mm.
Or generally do, you know. So that's why we've been touring Europe as it's easier. And then, but in the UK, everyone made sure we had somewhere to stay. And sometimes that was, like I was saying, like our own beds. And sometimes it was two couches in the corner of the lounge and all five of us kind of like, you know, piled up in sleeping bags on the floor, making a little kind of, you know, six-year-old slumber party thing. Yeah. And that was fun too, you know, like it was good. A few nights of that and you know, you're getting sore, but that's all part of it. And it's cool, you know?
Yeah, it can be cool.
But again, if you're at a certain level where you've paid your dues and you don't want to do that, I understand why bands will go, you know, I'm just going to pay the $25 or whatever per head and go to a backpackers or go to a whatever. So that's kind of up to you. But if you are, if you're not getting put up by somebody, then parking is a big priority, particularly if you've got a van with gear on it. So generally the side of the motorway kind of places are good, that kind of thing.
Yep, cool. Nice one. So always ask other bands as well. I've even stayed at fans' houses, get to the end of the night, no one else has got a place for you to crash.
Yeah, totally.
You ask the guy that was in the front row headbanging the hardest and say, dude, can we crash on your floor?
Totally.
Yeah. There's always an option.
I've got friends who have toured the world, toured the States multiple times, and they never plan where they're going to stay.
Yeah.
And it always used to like baffle my mind because like my OCD and like organizational thing is like, you organize that. And I was like, you know, they will just stay there and they will drink as many beers as they can get at the end of the night. And then, cool, can we crash at your place? Or it's like, oh, where are you staying? Oh, I haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah,
I'm like, it's 11 o'clock at night. It's like, yeah, we'll sort it out.
Otherwise, it's the van. Yeah,
you know, and it's like, and I that's cool if that's your buzz and you can do that, and that's cool as well, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, there isn't anything glamorous about, you know, I think about that side of touring. You know, it's like, regardless of whether you're staying in a nice hotel or you're staying on someone's floor, it's like, it's generally for not very long. You're generally really tired from however long you've been on tour. It's kind of just get what you can give.
Fair. Mm. Okay. So there's two more aspects to consider, but I think I'm going to skip one a little bit. Promotion. I think we're going to... I might go into further detail another time.
Okay.
In there. I've got blog posts about it, so anyone listening can look that up.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I really do want to talk about before we wrap up part one is money.
Mm.
How do you fund a tour? Is it just full-time jobs? Is it the band generating money first? How can people expect to fund their tour?
I think being really realistic about it, you know, like pretty much everyone I know from the more successful bands that I work with, to say my own would be, you know, they're working a job, you're saving up your money, and it's all about how you frame that. Like, if you don't have, responsibilities necessarily, like, you know, kids and mortgages and stuff like that, then it makes it a little easier to go, I'll pay for flights or I'll pay for this, I'll pay for gas or whatever it is, save up, put aside however much, and then, I'm basically traveling for free once I've done that.
Yeah.
That's one way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's generally a kind of a combination. We'll have fundraiser shows for if we're going away on tour.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So we'll ask several of our friends, do you mind playing for free or very little?
Yeah.
And then we'll put on a great party, great show, you know, $10 on the door, whatever, might raise $500 to $2,000 or whatever, depending on how many people come through and how many costs there are, which goes into the pot, and that helps a lot, you know. online record sales.
Yep.
You know, Bandcamp and stuff, that's just going into a PayPal account.
Yep.
Show money goes into a band fund, merch money goes into a band fund. That will get recycled.
So growing your band fund.
Growing your band fund, but relying solely on a band fund, it's just not realistic. No. Credit cards.
Yep.
making sure as many people in the band have a viable credit card, mm-hmm. as I discovered in the UK this time around and Europe, you need to have, if you're booking a car, the primary driver has to have a credit card in their name and a valid driver's license.
Mm.
And we had these bizarre combinations of people with credit cards with lots of money on it, but no driver's license. People with full driver's licenses with no credit card and no money.
Yeah.
And it was just this, you know, rigmarole of kind of figuring that kind of thing
getting
out.
Around
so
it. Yeah.
I'm sure that's a whole nother story, but there's a list of, you know, having a credit card, even if you can get it with a $1,000 limit or $500 limit or whatever,
yeah.
is going to save your ass on a tour. But generally just saving up, putting your own money in and then, or putting it all on a credit card and hoping the tour pays for, say, the flights or whatever.
Okay, so how are we looking at getting paid from a tour? Is it just ticket sales, merch?
Merch is, unless you're Fugazi and you don't sell merch.
Do they not sell merch?
No. they were, you know, opposed to having merch for it. Then merch is kind of almost your primary way of making money, you know, like, so having good t-shirts, having good record packages, you know, something that, you know, I always like the combination of the aesthetic and the music. So, you know, if you've got some great band t-shirts, as you know, I'm sure everyone we know has a ridiculous collection of band t-shirts, you know, and it's like, then that's going to make you money on tour.
Yep.
And then, you know, hopefully getting some gas money at the end of the night.
From tickets.
Yeah, from tickets or from, you know, from door, depending on what level you're kind of operating at.
Yeah.
You know,
And how likely are we to break even?
Probably not on this particular tour, and this is our first album tour.
Yeah,
very unlikely.
Yeah,
and I think just being realistic about that,
yep.
like, being as egoless as possible is a good trait to have in anything. Mm. I think kind of going best case scenario is, you know, we don't have to pay for accommodation or whatever, or we don't have to pay for food because, you know, we all decided to chip in, go to the supermarket and get a big bag of food that we, you know, and some plastic bowls and spoons and things.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're having breakfast on the side of the road, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. Or you're at a level where you're going out and you're eating every day and you're getting per diems of $20 per member or whatever.
Yeah.
So it kind of depends. But, I don't know how many tours, even all the way up to, like, you know, unless you're Adele. But even people slightly lower than that. Now, Adele just smashed it on that last world tour, like broke every record ever. But even artists just underneath that are touring at almost that level, you know, because there's obviously so many more costs involved.
Yeah, as you gain popularity, you're expected to put on bigger shows, bigger light rigs, and hire better people to do your crewing, and then your costs have just risen. You're playing, you know, huge venues, and you have to pay for that. And
totally,
yeah.
Like I just teched for someone from a very big 80s band, and it was at the Town Hall, which its capacity is like 2,100 or something like that, and they sold like 500 tickets, and I was replacing one of their crew who had got sick, and you know, they were. There was a lot of costs involved in touring that, you know, there's 10 people in the band and they're freighting all the gear and they've got like 10 crew and that kind of thing. It's like 500 tickets isn't going to cover that, you know? So even bands operating at that level.
Still taking a loss sometimes.
Taking a big loss. Well, the promoters are, yeah, totally. Yeah. So, yeah, it's, I think right down from a really small DIY kind of tour up, if you're breaking even, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
But that's and that on the actual tour, and that's where the merch and things are the things that actually
matter. Yeah,
totally.
Make the difference.
Mm.
Okay, there you have it.
Mm.
Nice one, part one.
Awesome.
So we're going to call it there for part one, and we'll move on to part two shortly, which is about live sound and achieving the best live sound you can. But I'm going to do I haven't told you about that.
Mm-hmm.
Band of the week, or band of the podcast, and because you are, it's a part two, two-part, you get to choose, well, you're doing two bands.
I'm doing two bands, okay.
So you get to choose one band.
Okay, well, in the theme of this one then, we could play Fugazi's song Merchandise.
Yeah, Fugazi Merchandise. That's the podcast for this week. Thank you so much for listening and or watching on YouTube. The Musicians Map podcast is part of the Musicians Map website, musiciansmap.org, where you can find lots more articles and videos, as well as my ebook and audiobook about growing success in music. In that book, you'll find experience-based advice about every aspect of learning music, from listening and learning an instrument to recording, gigging, touring, and making money as a musician. For those of you wanting to get serious about your musical journey, I offer one-on-one development sessions and song critiques, which are honestly an incredible way to gain the focus and direction required to achieve your goals, whatever they might be. I've also got a free 5-day challenge to a clear musical pathway. In the 5-day challenge, you will learn how to define your taste and clear your path, how to expand your horizons and exploit your musical potential, how to become a better musician just by listening, how to discover your niche and make it work for you, and how to set achievable goals and actually follow through. And it's totally free. So once again, head to musiciansmap.org to take advantage of all the resources on offer. Thanks again for listening. Stay tuned next week for part two with Tom Anderson. Please get in touch with your comments, suggestions, and let me know what challenges you're facing at the moment over at the Musicians Map Facebook group. I always respond, and stay positive.